Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivadakacharya Asatara Satushi Shriman His Divine Grace Lacey Bhaktivedanta Swami Raj Srila Prabhupada Kijai Kaur Premanande Harival Glories Slava Slava Brani Bhaktam Slava Shigurui Shigranga Branim. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksum Militam Yenha Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigurum Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagurjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivasakans Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishubhanu Sudha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedvaita Gadadhar Srivastati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Isn't that plugged in? Doesn't work. Right? So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, The Forest of Enjoyment, Text 31. And it's somehow or another, they wrote it down there? No, they didn't write it down there. Okay, it's all in prose anyhow. And if I read it, it would make any difference to anyone. So I'll just read the translation, the purport. In this way, the descendants of the monkeys intermingle with each other, and they are generally known as Shudras. Without hesitating, they live and move freely, not knowing the goal of life. They are simply captivated by seeing the faces of one another, which remind them of sense gratification. They are always engaged in material activities known as Gramya Karma, and they work hard for material benefit. They forget completely that one day their small lifespan will be finished and they will be degraded in the evolutionary cycle. So they are captivated simply by seeing the faces of one another, which remind them of sense gratification. So what does this remind us of? What social media does this remind us of? What is it called? Facebook, yes, Facebook. Of course, the devotees use Facebook for transcendental reasons, but most people are not so transcendental. Purport. Materialistic people are sometimes called Shudras, or descendants of monkeys, due to their monkey-like intelligence. They do not care to know how the evolutionary process is taking place, nor are they eager to know what will happen after they finish their small human lifespan. This is the attitude of Shudras. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, this Krishna consciousness movement, is trying to elevate Shudras to the Brahmana platform so that they will know the real goal of life. Unfortunately, being overly attached to sense gratification, materialists are not serious in helping this movement. Indeed, some of them try to suppress it. Thus, it is the business of monkeys to disturb the activities of the Brahmanas. The descendants of monkeys completely forget that they have to die, and that they are very proud of scientific knowledge and the progress of material civilization. The word gramya karmana indicates activities meant only for the improvement of material bodily comforts. Presently, all human society is engaged in improving economic conditions and bodily comforts. People are not interested in knowing what is going to happen after death, nor do they believe in the transmigration of the soul. When one scientifically studies the evolutionary theory, one can understand that human life is a junction where one may take the path of promotion or a degradation. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:25, Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti putri rataha putani yanti bhuteja yanti madhyajino pimam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors, and those who worship me will live with me. In this life, we have to prepare ourselves for promotion to the next life. Those who are in the mode of Rajagun are generally interested in being promoted to the heavenly planets. Some unknowingly are degraded to lower animal forms. Those in the mode of goodness can engage in devotional service, and after that, they can return home back to Godhead. Yanti madhyajino primam. That is the real purpose of human life. This Krishna consciousness movement is trying to bring intelligent human beings to the platform of devotional service. Indeed, instead of wasting time trying to attain a better position in material life, they should simply endeavor to return home back to Godhead, and all problems will be solved. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridyantaksto Hiya Bhajrani Vidunoti Saritsatam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Super Soul, in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. One simply has to follow the regular principles, act like a Brahmin, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, one purifies himself of the baser material modes, tamogun and rajagun. And becoming free from the greed of these modes, one can attain peace of mind. In this way, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and one's relationship with Him, and thus be promoted to the highest perfection, siddhim paramam gata. So the text again. In this way, the descendants of the monkeys intermingle with each other, and they are generally known as Shudras. Without hesitating, they live and move freely, not knowing the goal of life. They are captivated simply by seeing the faces of one another, which remind them of sense gratification. They're always engaged in material activities known as gramya karma, and they work hard for material benefit. Thus they forget that their small lifespan will be finished and they'll be degraded in the evolutionary cycle. So I guess the last verse must have dealt with monkeys. Varna Jate, the society of monkeys or the descendants of the monkeys. So it begins with, carry on from there. Namo Vishnu Viraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swami Tiramane Namaste Sarasutunde Ve Gauravani Bhurcharne Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskatyade Satarne. Here the Bhagavatam is talking about human beings as if they're monkeys. So that may seem quite either offensive to many people, how dare you consider us to be monkeys, or it may be taken as being sarcastic. But actually, there is some truth, as Prabhupada points out, that generally there are four classes of people. There are active intelligent, or there's lazy intelligent, active intelligent, lazy foolish, and active foolish. It can be considered that the Shudras, they're actively foolish. The Vaishyas are also foolish, but they're lazy foolish. The Kshatriyas are active intelligent, and the Brahmanas are lazy intelligent. If we examine modern society, they're very, very active. Most of society is active, and they're actively foolish. And the basic problem is that people don't know, number one, most obvious to one who has some intelligence, that we're not the material body, that we're actually spiritual beings. Now, most people have no interest in that. If we told people, we give them a book, and I watched at the airport watching one devotee named Pragosh. He was tried for a while at the Chicago airport. He'd tell everyone, explain how they're not their body. But for most people, it's exactly if you tell a dog, you hand a book to a dog, and you give the, and you explain your body's changing, but you're not changing. The only thing you'll get from the dog, you won't get a donation, you'll just get a woof. Rawr. He will not appreciate the philosophy. First of all, he won't understand what you're talking about. So where is there any question of acting according to it? On the other hand, one who has some intelligence, they might be able to pick up the fact that their body is changing, but they themselves within the body don't change. But the next moment they're going to be engaged in materialistic activities anyhow. Because it's not sufficient to know that we're not the body, to act as if we're not the body. So what if we're not the body? The only thing we have right now is the body. And we're going to have to do something with the body. And if we don't know what to do with the body, we'll do our usual monkey business with the body. The problems that monkey business are, the monkeys, their only business is not to sit down and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Their business is not devotional service or even self-realization. Their business is to eat nicely, and they're very, very active for that. Someone gave me something to bring on the plane in Vrindavan, when I was in Vrindavan, to eat, and as soon as the monkeys saw it, they immediately grabbed it. I got out of the car, and there's one monkey looking at the car, and I thought maybe he's just sitting there, but actually he was the lookout. literally, he was the lookout for the rest of the monkeys. As soon as I got out with my lunch package, one monkey immediately grabbed it, and all his friends were there. Of course, that wasn't the end of the story. I stood up and went, "Rawr!" The monkeys thought it would be better to drop the lunch packet than to face someone as crazy as I seem. So they dropped the lunch packet and they fled. But they were so quick, they had partially eaten two of the samosas. And I wasn't very much enthused to have monkey prasad, so. There were three other samosas that were intact. But they were quite quick for sense gratification. But they were right next door to the temple, and we didn't see even one of those monkeys. Of course, I didn't know them very well. But no monkey came to the temple and sat peacefully at any of the classes, or the kirtans for that matter. Their only business is to how to steal prasadam or glasses. They'll steal anything to eat. Sometimes they steal glasses so that they can either chew on the glasses, the plastic, I guess it's, or they get an exchange. They bargain. You offer them a banana and they drop the glasses and then they take the banana instead. So they're trained to barter. If you offer them 100 rupees, they won't take it. If you offer them a banana, at least the monkeys know the actual value of things. They know 100 rupees is useless. But a banana is something practical. You could try offering them a 2,000 rupee note, see if they think has any more value than the 100 rupee note. Probably not. They'll still take a banana. But most people have no idea that there's something other than just to gratify the senses. Although it appears that modern society has advanced beyond the monkeys, after all we have so much science. They've provided us with cars and computers and so many different things. But ultimately, what is the car meant for? Basically, what do people use the car for? I mean, most people go to the store so they can buy a banana. The monkeys, they don't have to go to the store. They just sit outside the shop, and when after someone buys a banana for them, they steal it. So the monkeys don't have to go to work to get a car or to ride to the grocery store. They know where to stay, if they can, because human beings have disturbed even the monkeys' life nowadays. But basically speaking, they're not going to invent a car to ride to the store to get a banana. Or why do they have computers? So you can check on how much money you have in the bank, so how many bananas you can buy. What's the availability of bananas at the grocery store, how much you have in the bank, how many bananas you can buy, etc. So we've simply made the same process complicated. If you have $1 billion in the bank and you can't buy anything to eat, what's the value of your $1 billion in the bank? So basically, human society is still engaged in the same activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And once they've solved the eating problem, supposedly, of course, they've realized they haven't solved the eating problem. Most people who have some intelligence, they know that if they go to the grocery store and they buy some food, it's hardly any food in there. There's just a bunch of chemicals thrown in with something that used to be food. According to Ayurveda, they have a different definition of food than just something you can chew enough that you can force it down your throat. That's not what the definition of food is. Food is something you can digest. So rarely you can go to a modern grocery store and find anything in a can, at least, that's digestible. Most of the food will digest you rather than you digesting it. It's so acidic, you put it in your stomach, and your stomach does, instead of the stomach digesting the food dissolves your stomach. But the science says, don't worry about that, because we can give you a plastic stomach. And that will last much longer, that even after you leave your body and your body decomposes, your plastic stomach will still be there. So this is as close as your body is going to get to eternity. And that which you helps you digest is called medicine. But nowadays, with all their scientific advancement, medicine, instead of helping you digest food, makes it impossible for you to digest food. Like their main weapon in their arsenal to so-called defeat disease is antibiotics. Anti means against, and biotic means life. So they're giving you something against your life. But that's not a problem for them, because if you get sick, then you buy more medicine. And that's very good. So if my medicine makes you sicker, that's very good for me, at least, because then I sell more medicine to you. And I've sold so much medicine that now I own everything, including the cemeteries and the morgues and everything else, and the ambulance that brings you to the hospital. So the more I give you medicine, so-called medicine, the sicker you become, then eventually I make more money, because then you die and you have to pay me for taking you to the morgue, and then you have to pay me for burying you, and then I make a lot of money. So this is a very good deal. Money, money, sweeter than honey. So modern society, which is more or less composed of people who are fools, and they think they have trust in bigger fools. They have trust the pharmaceutical company is going to save me. The hospital is going to save me. But actually they're not interested, more or less. It's not that there aren't sincere people trying to help others in some way or another. But the way it's been arranged is that because they're in ignorance, they don't know what's actually, even from the material point of view, what's actually beneficial and what's not beneficial. They say they're saving people's time and money by putting food in a can, which has something in it full of chemicals which are poisonous, and whatever is called food in there is indigestible. They had this movie called Big Mac, or Super Size Me, it's called, where they had these fries from McDonald's, and they put under a glass and waited to see how long it would take to decompose. They put their hamburgers and other things. And within a few weeks or months, or within a few weeks, the hamburgers turned orange and green due to the mold. Potatoes looked exactly like the day they put them underneath the glass. There wasn't even the slightest change. In other words, no respectable bacteria would even go near such a potato. They realized it was so indestructible that probably after people eat it, when they discover their bodies after 10,000 years, the potatoes will still be there. Completely preserved by whatever chemicals they put them into. So this they call food, but it's indigestible, and that which you can't digest is called poison. So actually they're feeding people poison in the name of food, and people are paying for it. And sometimes they have a bargain. You know, people rush to the store because there's a bargain. our poison today is on sale. Get it cheap. So even from the point of view of common sense, people have little common sense, as we've heard, is very uncommon in Kali Yuga. And if we tell people your body's changing, Prabhupada said it'll take 500 years for people to understand that. But you're not changing. You're a soul, and the reason why you're not happy is because you're not acting as a soul, you're acting as a body. And not only you're acting as a body, but you don't even know how to act as a body. Most people aren't even trained up how to brush their teeth. They don't know how to, which side of the bed to sleep on. They have no idea what's going on. But they're, as it says here, they're puffed up and proud that they're advancing. But where are they advancing? Well, according to the Bhagavatam, Yamaraj, he came as Vidura because he needed a vacation right before Kali Yuga started, because he would have to, he's going about to work overtime. 24 hours a day for Yamaraj isn't enough. He has to work 26 hours a day to keep up with all the fallen souls coming to visit him. So people are advancing, they're advancing towards the darkest regions of ignorance. And if we're, unless we're convinced about that, we actually think people are doing all right. We think, well, they seem to be advancing. Every year, there's a new operating system coming out. The internet is getting faster. Everything seems to be progressive. Because people are becoming more miserable. Their memory is going down, as it says, tadas tanudinam dharma. Religious principles, practically non-existent. Just barely, people appear to be civilized. But even that thin veneer of civilization is wearing thinner as days go by. Tadas tanudinam dharma. Even in America, of course in America, they always, the newspapers always like to report which is the most horrible thing going on, because people are accustomed to horrible things. So it always has to be one step beyond what's normally horrible. So, and the headlines of the papers are, man jumps other man, naked man jumps other man and eats his face on the highway. So that, now you're grimacing, and how horrible, that sounds disgusting. But when the sages heard that one sudra dressed as a king was beating on a cow, they were horrified. Nowadays, people wouldn't even think, well, that's beating him. Why didn't he kill him and cook him? He's just beating him. So people have become accustomed, and you have to have one step beyond what's considered to be normal, to be considered to be horrible nowadays. So tadas tanudinam dharma satvam, truthfulness. One of my services in ISKCON is that I have some responsibility for ascertaining when some problem is there, when there is some, some senior leader has some problem, and then doing some investigation. Somehow or another, I've gotten that. What most people wouldn't consider to be a very relishable service. But I was watching when Udemy, which I get for free, video, which was actually quite coarse, on how to tell people if they're lying, if they're telling untruth. It was made by a professional investigator who did it for like 20 years, sergeant in the police. And more or less the conclusion is that practically everyone's lying. The question is how much they're lying. On Books of Fusion, I notice that generally the first words that come out of most people's mouths is a lie. The first thing they say when you say give a, if they're not into giving a donation, they say, I have no money. And then if you convince them, you know, just give a penny or give a dollar or a euro. So they open their wallet and they're trying to look through their 100 euro notes, trying to find it. Get them to chant Hare Krishna. But even that will not be sufficient unless they understand what they're doing. So the books are the basis. By the books we can understand how the chanting of Hare Krishna in this age is the process of salvation. But without these books we won't have intelligence even to understand that. Therefore everything in our society is meant to take shelter of these books. Prabhupada's books specifically, because he is the current link in our disciple succession. Even someone may become self-realized, but they'll become self-realized in this age by following Prabhupada's, at least in ISKCON, as they follow Prabhupada's books. No one's going to independently become self-realized. There's very few Sukadeva Goswamis popping in to the universe nowadays. Most of us are coming to this material world as conditioned souls, and even when someone becomes self-realized, it's because they heard from Prabhupada and his followers, their teachings, and his books, try to apply it within their lives and got the mercy of our acharyas and Krishna, and therefore come to the platform of realizing what's in these books. Therefore, as Prabhupada, we say sometimes, books are the basis. The books are the basis of everything. If we want to get out of the miseries of Kali Yuga, and if we want to go back to the spiritual world, it's only by taking shelter of Prabhupada's teachings. For that reason, that's why we have a class every day. Not because there's so much time during the day, we wake up so early, so we have to fill it up with time. Something to do. No, it's so we can understand what we're doing and how to do it. Why we're here. Why we happen to come. Most of us didn't just wander in and out of the street. Can't figure out why we're here. And even if that's not what we hear when we sit here, we're actually trying to figure out why are we here. It's voluntary. There's no one at the door there making sure that no one gets out. But the reason why we're here is to find out why we're here, how to become Krishna conscious, how to avoid the problems of material existence, especially in Kali Yuga. So we have to hear. And if we hear properly, we'll gain intelligence, spiritual intelligence, and if we gain spiritual intelligence, we'll know how to become steadily engaged in devotional service with some enthusiasm, and that way Krishna will be merciful to us. And first he'll give us more intelligence in devotional life, how to become more devotional, more aware, and then he'll actually reveal himself. And then we'll get transcendental experience or realization, so that we'll get the higher taste that we're actually hankering for, and we won't be no longer attracted by this so-called advancement of modern civilization, the hope that actually things are going to improve. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. I have no idea. Yeah, I haven't been on Facebook for 3 years now, so I don't know. If I knew, I'd probably be on Facebook. But I'm sure I know that there's some bona fide ways of doing it. If you have a Facebook page, you can put down where you're going to be and what time the lecture is going to be. Something like that. You can post pictures of Krishna or something. Unfortunately, I don't know how Facebook works nowadays. Unfortunately, even you have, maybe you can arrange in such a way as you can have something purely devotional. But then people will spend the whole day looking at, you know, Facebook. They won't do any service. But I guess that's, at least they're hearing, chanting something about Krishna. So there's some way of utilizing it. I mean, it's mass media. And therefore, if you went around and told everyone what time the talk's going to be in the temple, then it would be very difficult to communicate. You'd have to call them up on the telephone. But if everyone's on the Facebook page, then immediately they understand what's the program. So that's helpful. If it's properly utilized for mass communication, for something devotional, it can be quite valuable. Unfortunately, what usually happens is that devotees think, yeah, this is very nice, you know, we're utilizing it. Let me just use my unlimited intelligence and go one step further. Be more creative in my use of Facebook. And then we get entangled. So it's like a razor's edge. It can be very good for communication. And if we start communicating the wrong way, we can get into a lot of trouble. Just like when Prabhupada would do something called the telex machine. Telex machine was the precursor to the fax machine, which I don't know. People don't use fax machines anymore, I don't think. Ananti, do you ever use fax anymore? Faxes? Faxes. Do you fax things nowadays? Someone here use a fax machine? What's that?
Sometimes.
What do you use it for? India. Yeah, anyhow, there was something called a fax machine that it was quite common. Nowadays it's more or less in India and in the museums. After all, India is usually, well, nowadays they're a little bit more so-called up-to-date. But generally most things are sent by email. You can send documents by email and have them printed. But fax machines, before they had fax machines, they had telexes, which I'm sure no one has a telex machine. You might be able to find one in a museum somewhere. What's that? A telex machine. So they asked Prabhupada, would it be alright if we install telex machines in our temples? This is probably 1969 or 70. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, it'll simply result in prajalpa. So telex machines were quite primitive. You know, you can only set, you know, type in something and it would just go. It's like type in the same, whatever you typed would, in one place would be typed into another place. But Prabhupada wasn't so much interested. As we know, when Prabhupada was asked if he can get a telephone in his room in 26 Second Avenue, that was probably 1966. And Prabhupada said, can I get a telephone? So they said yes. And within a couple of days, he had a telephone in his room. So Prabhupada was quite surprised. Usually in India, it would take at least 6 months before they install a telephone. And probably another year before it started to work. Unless you paid a bribe. Then you get it quicker. I remember the first time I was in India, when you wanted to make a long distance telephone call, it took, at that time, only 24 hours. To make a long-distance telephone call. The year before or so, this is 1974, it would take 48 hours to make a long-distance telephone call. But if you paid an extra, a huge amount of Lakshmi at that time, then they put on the super-fast long-distance rate, which was, it would only take eight hours to make the telephone call. That means you'd make it was called a trunk call. You put in your order for the long distance telephone call, and then sometimes you have to wait there at the when the operator is making the connections, because you might miss it. If you went away for 8 hours, then it would take 8 hours, and you came back and it only took 7 hours and 59 minutes, then you missed the call, and you lost all your money. So you have to wait there for 8 hours to make a long distance telephone call. So nowadays, of course you can make everyone, even on this iWatch, you can call up someone. But what will it generally be? What are people utilizing for? It's just prajalpa. Just nonsense talk. Where are we going to eat? Where are you going to sleep? Are you going to mate today? How's your defense going? What's the bank balance? So they've made things very scientific. But generally they're utilized for sense gratification. Of course, the devotees can utilize it for Krishna service, but when Prabhupada indicated, we should be careful how to utilize these things, otherwise we'll get entangled. Because they made it in such a way as to make it very attractive. All these colors come on the screen, and the lights go on, and the fireworks go off, and there's someone, beautiful man or woman, just cooing at you. Oh, you're so good, you're so kind, you're on my Facebook page. Yes.
Watching lectures from somewhere, because he is going live, he's giving almost every day Facebook, like he's seeing the Darshan from BT somewhere, and from another day. So for me, this is nice, like nice way. Because second day, I'm watching the lectures, and he's communicating this. Like, he likes this way to use every kind of media.
Yeah, it can be utilized, it's just that one has to be careful. That's what it's utilized is for Krishna consciousness. But there's the way unless one is very, very serious, one will easily become distracted by everything else that's being offered. Yeah, it says, just click here, it's so easy. You just click there, yeah, it's, you know, just let me click there, and then suddenly something appears that you wish wasn't there afterwards. So it requires a lot of self-control to utilize it properly. Yes.
In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the commentary, it stated that, I think it's the second chapter, that we don't know how to apply our compassion properly. So there is probably a limit to our material compassion, over which our material compassion is harmful, or means our material compassion can harm other people, so we should control it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's very difficult to figure out sometimes. Therefore, our compassion is Atmopamyena Sarvatra Samam Pashati Arjuna Sukham Vadaya Dukham Siyogi Paramomataha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he is a true yogi who sees the true equality of all living entities, both in their happiness and distress. So the true equality is spiritual. So one is compassionate, seeing that the living entities have forgotten their eternal relation with Krishna. And that's the real compassion, is to help them revive their relation with Krishna. The other compassions may get us into a lot of difficulty. Like, Lord Shiva was very compassionate to Vrikasura. Vrikasura was cutting his flesh and throwing it into the fire to get the mercy of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva appeared out of compassion when Vrikasura was about to cut his head off and throw it into the fire. So out of compassion he appeared, touched him, cured his cuts and all the wounds he got from cutting his flesh, and then offered him a benediction out of compassion. But the result is Vrikasura wanted to kill Lord Shiva, touch Lord Shiva's head and kill him, and steal his wife. So that was a result of Lord Shiva's compassion. So we should be careful how much compassionate we are. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj Shiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.